This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. Space, the final frontier. Jhana reminded me of that one. Some of us have been studying space for a few days. A Dogen Zenji essay called Space, exploring what is space and how do we practice with it. There's this space-like nature of mind, awareness-like vast space. When sitting zazen, we often notice some activity happening, like thoughts arising, feelings arising, physical sensations arising, also sounds and smells and all kinds of experiences, and those usually capture our attention because they're in the foreground of zazen. But if we're very still and settled in zazen, we can look back at the background behind all of these experiences. The space that surrounds them. Awareness is something that we actually can't get a hold of. We try to locate awareness. It has no edges, right? I mean, what is awareness? Just to ask this question starts to open us to space. Awareness, where moving through all day long, and yet what is it? When we look back at what it is, we don't find any edges, we can't find any demarcations really in awareness itself, although there's all this stuff happening in awareness. It's hard to notice awareness because the stuff happening in it is the dominant thing. So to be aware of awareness, minding mind, is a kind of unusual activity. But we could say it's the heart of Zen practice. Like, awareness is like a summer sky, a Jikoji, clear blue sky, but then through it these clouds are drifting, clouds of thought and feeling and sensory experience. And the clouds don't hinder the sky at all, really, right? The clouds can't disturb the sky. And the sky doesn't disturb the clouds. But sometimes clouds are stormy and painful. And sometimes they're light and fluffy. But in any case, the sky is always the same. So to let our attention fall back into the background sky that's not changing and has no edges or boundaries is always available. This is one way to look at space. And we've heard some other stories this week that Dogen brings up about space. To kind of summarize them, one ancient Zen practitioner asked another, how do you grasp space? And the other went like this, pinched the air. And his friend said, that's not how you grasp space. You grasp it like this. And he reached out and grabbed the other's nose by the nostrils. And that one said, ouch. So space, when you try to grasp the sky, actually, it's not just a matter of grasping the sky. You can grasp the cloud in the sky, the dark, solid-seeming storm cloud in the sky. And that's grasping space, too, because the clouds are part of the sky. They can't be separated from it. The very nature of the cloud is sky. So we could try to grasp the sky, but actually, when you grasp the cloud, it's also grasping, getting a hold of the sky. So that was one story that points out that our idea of space is not just like a vacuum. Everything that's happening in space is part of space. It can even maybe access this this kind of understanding a little bit just through like a visual perception. So we're looking out at a room full of people and objects, and they seem to be like out there solidly existing, but actually these are the room of images is actually mental image, right? It's a mind image. It's a reflection on the back of our retina that's translated through through various nerves to the brain, which conjures up a virtual reality called this Zendo full of people. But sometimes in Zazen we can get a sense that actually it's a little bit more like space appearing as a room full of people. Space-like people. Space creatures. And so that's one story about to grab space is like everything that's happening in space seems like grabbable, but in terms of mind, this is like mind space manifesting as a physical, visual, auditory, tactile, olfactory sensations and experiences. So then another story we heard is that Dogen tells is another two Zen practitioners, and one is a lecturer on the Heart Sutra, which could also be translated as the Mind Sutra. And his friend asks, how do you teach the Heart-Mind Sutra? And he says, I teach it with the mind. And to kind of paraphrase a little bit, his friend challenges back, well, this dualistic mind that creates the appearance of self and objects, how can that teach this perfect wisdom Heart Sutra, this teaching of no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no color, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind, and so on, that the Heart Sutra teaches? How can it says no mind in the sutra, right? So how can mind teach no mind? And then his friend says, well then, how does it work? You're not saying that like empty space would teach the Heart Sutra. And his friend says, yes, actually, empty space teaches the Heart Sutra. And the friend's getting kind of sick of that kind of talk. So he starts walking out, like, well, enough of that conversation. And his friend calls him back, wait a minute. And he turns around and his friend says, just this, from birth to death. And sometimes in the immediacy of the present moment, when called, wait a minute. So there was some openness, even though this practitioner was sick of the conversation and storming out of the room, maybe, there was still some openness when he was called. He said, he turned his head. Huh? That's like this moment of like fresh openness, right? And in that moment of fresh openness, his friend pointed out, just this right now, from birth to death, nothing other than this fresh openness that we could actually call space. And that fresh openness of yes, I could say that could teach the Heart Sutra. It's not that mind is not involved, that dualistic mind would not be involved. As soon as we're using words to teach the Heart Sutra, we're involved in concepts and duality. But that fresh moment of yes, that moment of openness, can be there in the background while using words. It's easier, of course, when we're not using words. That's why when we're sitting zazen, we don't talk. Because I think it's easier to access space when we're not talking or listening and thinking so much. But we can still see if we can open to space, like, can I, while talking now and chopping up the world with words like this into concepts and subjects and objects and graspable entities, while I'm using these words, can I also be aware of this background space that's just like, you know, vast, boundless awareness that's just watching this person here spewing out words. It's hard because I'm trying to pay attention to the next word and choose the right word. It's hard to pay attention to that one that's just not doing anything behind. But when I do, then it becomes more enjoyable to speak. So maybe as a listener too, what does this mean now? Or like, now I'm using his chopped up words to chop up my own reality and try to figure this out. But at the same time, there's this background space that's like listening and not chopping anything up. Almost like watching the chopping. There's a background awareness watching the world be chopped up. That doesn't mind it being chopped up. The sky doesn't mind the clouds. We can fully engage in the work of chopping the world, which is like having a conversation, for example, while still appreciating the background awareness. This is the unity of the two truths. There's many Zen stories about this, like somebody sweeping the ground in the foreground. Somebody sweeping the foreground with a broom and just focused on that task. And his friend says, too busy. And then one sweeping says, you should know that there's one that's not busy. So I think this is the same point. There's this sky-like awareness that's never busy. At the same time that I'm sweeping the ground, the same time that I'm talking or listening, there's always space. So we heard another poem from Dogen's teacher. The whole body This poem is called Wind Bell, about a bell hanging in the wind. The whole body is like a mouth hanging in space. And just during Zazen, this image came up for me, and I just think it's just a wonderfully weird and beautiful image, like almost like picturing. I almost have this visual image, right? There's boundless space, like big sky, and in the midst of that sky, there's a mouth hanging in space. What's it hanging from? What is space? There's a mouth, like, floating in space, we might say. And the mouth is like a wind bell. So when the wind blow through space and blow the wind bell around, it responds. So the poem is, the entire body is a mouth hanging in space, and the wind blows from the east or west or north or south. This mouth bell joins the whole universe in chiming out perfect wisdom. Ding, 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 ding. So it's like the whole body is like, you could say us, like as a sentient being, as a person, we're like these mouths, a bunch of mouths hanging in space. And when the winds called causes and conditions blow on this sentient being, it responds. And we might say it responds, sometimes it gets angry or whatever, it responds. It has difficulty responding, but in a way, it's always chiming out wisdom. Right? It is just response. Our sentient being is just a response to the causes and conditions blowing through space. And if it's just responding, which in fact it actually is, I think, always just responding, that response is like wisdom. Sometimes it's a ding, and sometimes it's a dong, but just response. And if we can remember that we, this sentient being, is a mouth hanging in space, then the stuff that comes out of the mouth is okay, actually. I'd say, but this is really stupid what I'm saying. Well, it's okay, actually, because it's like just flowing forth from the space. So now we've reached the last little story in this essay of Dogen. Finishing this Sashin exploration of space. Vasubandhu, the 21st ancestor. And some of you might know Vasubandhu. He's the co-founder of the mind-only school of Indian Buddhism. It's quite appropriate, because he has a little verse here about mind. Mind-only school is basically saying there's nothing but mind. Everything is just manifestations of mind. So Vasubandhu is, along with his brother Asanga, brought forth this type of teaching in the third or fourth century in India. So Vasubandhu, the 21st Zen ancestor, so in our Zen lineage, he's the 21st ancestor after Shakyamuni Buddha. He said, mind is like the world of space, equally bringing forth things of space. When you realize space, there's nothing good or bad. And I wanted to ask Ying about this good or bad point. Could you also say that as like, there's no this and no other, maybe? Yeah,
or no equal, no negation.
Uh-huh. No, know this and know not this, maybe even. Well, that's great. Because I think I might veer towards that type of translation rather than good or bad. Yeah, and more pertinent, I think, to this poem. We're unpacking the Chinese translations as we go here. So, and also the structure of the poem is kind of nice because it has like space in the same place in each line. And I think that third line, or when you realize space, it's this issue of time, right? So maybe we could translate it as realizing the time of space. Do you think that would work? Is that a stretch? You know, in this translation,
time of realizing, or almost like how do you say, affirming, verifying
and attaining space,
yeah,
right?
At the time of verifying space, there is no this and no not this.
But to put like a word, you know how after space, there's a word after space in each line to make it match.
Yeah.
If we're saying mind is like the world of space, equally bringing forth things of space, verifying the time of space. Yeah, just to make it like symmetrical.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, is we might put it like that. In the Chinese, it has that symmetry. Mind is like the world of space, equally bringing forth things of space, verifying and attaining the time of space. There's no this or other than this. We could look at it like that. So, and this is so mind is like the world of space, like the big vast sky. And then the sky, what is it that there's like little like moisture particles in the sky start congealing together and a cloud forms miraculously out of empty sky. Something like that. Is it like particles? I don't know physically what's happening there. Maybe it's like tiny little particles can collect the moisture. Does anybody know? Mm-hmm. Scientifically?
Condensation
onto like dust. Yeah, so condensation. It's kind of like that with the mind, right? There's just this vast open awareness that starts condensing into thoughts, right? Starts condensing into experiences. We could say thoughts are condensed awareness, are condensed spacious awareness. Spacious awareness is very like free and open, and sometimes in Zazen when there's not much thought activity, it's the greatest, right? I mean, it's so peaceful, and because thoughts are like slightly, even good thoughts are slightly disturbing because they're chopping, they're chopping space into like pieces, they're too condensed. Condensation is like not so relaxed, right? Space contracts and condenses into clouds. So mind is like the world of vast space, equally bringing forth, maybe like manifesting, things of space, space-like things, like, for example, you know, the word is dharmas, so things or phenomena or experiences, or thoughts and aches and pains and all of this stuff. Mind, like the world of space, brings forth things of space. So these things, all dharmas, are actually space. And the big mind condenses into things of space. I think that's my take on these first two lines. Mind is like the world of space, equally bringing forth things of space. And maybe equally is like that actually all these different types of clouds in space are actually equally space. And like, you know, good thoughts and bad thoughts and, you know, pleasure and pain. On the bottom line, they're all equally space, equally things of space. And then this third line, when you realize space or realizing or verifying the time of space, so maybe pointing out the immediacy of, you know, right now is also a kind of condensation. This moment is a condensation, because actually space and even spacious awareness like this is timeless, actually. Sometimes in Zazen you get that feeling like, I have no idea when this period ended and began, and when it ends, it seems really quick or really long, and because time is actually a human construct, right? And it starts to break down in the vastness of space, and time is like a reference point, and things are reference points, and so in the really boundless, edgeless, dimensionless, space-like nature of mind, there's not even time, not even the present moment. So in the Dzogchen tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, they talk about the four times. You know, usually we think of the three times, past, present, and future, but in terms of the nature of mind, there's the fourth time, which is like neither past, future, or present, like timeless time. And that's referring to this, you know, boundless awareness is not even really the present moment. And I think even experientially in Zazen, we're trying to be present, right? That's our practice. We're trying to let go of the past and future and rest in the present. I think very, very useful instruction, because past and future really pull us away from what's happening right now. But then if we're really settled in Zazen, in the present moment, we can start to see even the present moment as a very subtle kind of reference point. It's like, yeah, right now, it's just right now. We're still like a sense of there's now as opposed to before and after. So maybe possible to even let go of that. And then like, it's hard to let go, because it's hard to let go of reference points, because then we disappear. And I don't want to disappear. My job is to appear. And the irony of this is that the greatest joy is when I disappear. But I can't experience that. It's a joy without an experiencer. And we're so used to being an experiencer that it's very hard to let go of ourself. So the time of space could be referring to this present moment, or it could be referring to timelessness, the fourth time. It's not past, present, or future. Or it could be the fourth time, or it could be like this time. That again, the present moment is like a condensation of the cloud in the sky, right? And this present moment, of course, doesn't hinder the space. Even thinking about past and future doesn't actually ever really hinder space. So, again, this poem is, mind is like the world of space, equally bringing forth things in space, verifying the time of space. There is no this or other than this. this version says good or bad, and another translation says right or wrong. Basically dualities. And I think good and bad, right or wrong, are obvious dualities, but this and other than this is a more subtle thing. even to say this is a reference point. There's a Zen story about this, where Nan Yue comes to the sixth ancestor, and the sixth ancestor says, "What is it that thus comes?" And Nan Yue says, "He can't answer." And he works on that question: "What is it that thus comes?" For years, and then finally he has a sense of what is it that comes thus. and he says, "I got it." And the sixth ancestor says, "What did you get? You've been working on this for years and years." And Nan Yue says, "To say it's this misses the mark." It took him years to be able to say that. He didn't even have an answer, right? Some graspable answer. His answer was, to even say that it's this that comes thus, even to say it's this, misses the mark. So that's a little bit like, there's not this, there's no this, and there's no other than this either. There's not this cloud, and there's not something other than this cloud. So that's the poem, and then Dogen comments on this line by line. So first, the first line, mind is like the world of space. Now we're talking about the big sky mind. Dogen says, now the person who faces the wall and meets the wall that faces the person. So, now the person who faces the wall meets the wall that faces the person. So in Zazen we sit facing the wall, and the person who faces the wall meets the wall that faces the person. So this interdependent relationship of mind and objects is like this sky-like mind. And then Dogen says, here is the mind of a wall, the mind of a decayed tree. This is the world of space. And these are Zen phrases, mind like a wall. Bodhidharma said, with a mind like a wall, you enter the way. A wall, especially like a clear white wall, has no reference points. A wall with no scratches or smudges on it is just a plain white wall. Anything could be there, but there's nothing particular there. And also a wall is like vertical, so like anything that you try to put on it just slides off it. So mind is like a wall in that way. If you try to actually put something on awareness, it just slides off. And the mind of a withered tree, a decayed tree, is another Zen image. Make your mind like a withered tree, meaning like just totally let go of everything. And then that image was around in Zen, and I think it's Cao Shan or one of our Zen ancestors from China said, actually you should know that in a withered tree there's a dragon howl. Dogen has a whole essay called Dragon Howl that's about the dragon howl in the withered tree. And this is also in the spirit of what we've been studying this week, that space is not just like a dead withered tree, right? It manifests as dragon howls and all kinds of stuff. Space is not just empty sky, it manifests as clouds. Fluffy ones. Fluffy howling dragon clouds. So, and then that's the comment on the first line. Then Dogen says, awakening, or really to save others, to cross others over, to save others with this body, one manifests the body to speak Dharma. So, like, actually, it's something like, to save others with this body, we manifest this body to speak Dharma. To save others with another body, one manifests another body to speak Dharma. Cause skip that sentence. So, and it seems to be referring to the Lotus Sutra, the Avalokiteshvara chapter of the Lotus Sutra has these celebrating this Bodhisattva of great compassion that can take any form. So in the sutra, it's like, you know that sutra? It's like when somebody is, drowning. I don't remember all the details of all these different manifestations, but like if somebody's like, drowning in the ocean, she manifests the body of a ship captain to come and save that person. If somebody's like a shopkeeper, she manifests the form of like a shopper to come meet at the counter and save them. And it has this over and over. If somebody is in this particular situation, Guan Yin, this great compassion Bodhisattva, manifests in this form to save this kind of person. So it has the same structure here. And so so Dogen's saying, to save or free or awaken others with this body, one manifests this body to teach Dharma in this way. To save others with some other kind of body, one manifests another kind of body. And that is equally bringing forth things of space. So I think this is emphasizing that this vast open spaciousness doesn't have any function, right? It's just empty space. It's just witnessing. It doesn't do anything. So to respond compassionately, it needs to condense into a beneficial cloud. It needs to create an appearance of a body or a mouth to help beings. So condensation is necessary. Bodhisattvas vow to condense into appearances in order to benefit beings, because just vast spaciousness can't do anything. It's fine that it can't do anything, but sentient beings, the appearance of sentient beings are calling out for help. They've forgotten that they're just space. Their condensation has grown too contracted. So a bodhisattva vows to like also appear as a contraction to respond to them. I think that's what this is about. Manifesting a body to save another is equally bringing forth things of space. And then the third line about this issue of time, Dogen says, being used by the 12 hours of the day and using the 12 hours of the day is verifying the time of space. And this is from a story of Zhao Zhou, the Zen ancestor who, I think story something like somebody comes to Zhao Zhou and says, what's the difference between me and you? And Zhao Zhou says something like, I use the 12 hours of the day and you're used by the 12 hours of the day. And Dogen likes to turn these things, and that makes it sound like being used by is not so good, right? Not as good as using, knowing how to use. But Dogen's really into this receptive samadhi where the myriad things come forth and use us. That's Dogen's understanding of practice. So I think, but also using things. We call it the self-receiving and self-employing samadhi. The self is received from the myriad things, and then the self uses the myriad things. So being used by the 12 hours of the day and using the 12 hours of the day, we could even say at the same time, is verifying the time of space. So, and then the last line, there's no this or other than this, there's no right and wrong. Dogen's comment is, if the rock's head is large, its base is large. If the rock's head is small, its base is small. If you haven't heard Dogen before, this is how he talks. I kind of picture it like there's a big rock that's half buried in the ground, right? And you're trying to discern if, I think some of you have dug some pretty big things out of Jikoji ground. I think Doug has dug I think there was a huge stump at one point. I remember seeing this stump that looked not so big on the top, but underground. It was huge. Oh, like a sculpture. Yeah, and something. It's big.
But the bottom of it now is small.
That's right, if you reverse it. And sometimes rocks don't always follow this rule. But maybe sometimes you can say, well, if the rock's head is large, then its base underneath is large. And if its head is small, its base is small. Maybe it's kind of like trying to discern how things are by like seeing a piece of them. Something like that. And there's another story where this might be some old Zen phrase too that we don't know where it comes from, because Dogen quotes it, the same thing elsewhere in his essay called All-Inclusive Study, Henzan, which means like to completely investigate something to the bottom. So Dogen says this all-inclusive study means if the top of the stone is large, the bottom is large. If the top is small, the bottom is small. And then he says, without changing the top of a stone, you allow the stone to be large or small. Like, you can still judge large and small on the bottom by seeing the top, but actually it doesn't matter. That the large stone's large and the small is small. To study 100,000 myriad things only as 100,000 myriad things is not yet all-inclusive study. But to turn 100,000 myriad bodies even in half a statement is all-inclusive study. So the point about a large rock is large and a small rock is small. You can discern the differences, but large is large and small is small. And there's nothing good or bad about large or small. There's nothing right or wrong about large or small. And there's not this large and there's not other than this small. All these reference points of large and small are reference points that are just relative to each other anyway. There's no inherent large or inherent small, right? Like this watch is huge compared to like a particle of dust, right? But it's small compared to Mount Sumeru. So there's no reference points. Mind, like the world of space, equally brings forth things of space, verifying the timeless time of space. There's no this or other than this. And then Dogen finishes by saying, investigate the fact right now that empty space is the treasury of the true Dharma eye. The Shobogenzo is the treasury of the true Dharma eye. Investigate the fact that empty space is the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the wondrous heart of Nirvana. This essay was presented to the assembly at Great Buddha Monastery in Echizen Province on the sixth day, the third month, the third year of the Kangen era, 1245, the year 1245, at exactly 12:28 p.m. And they all lived happily ever after.
In space.
In space. The final frontier. Because it's such a great line, actually, right? Because there's nothing beyond space. There's nothing outside of space. There's nothing really in space either, except more space, equally brought forth as things of space. So, thank you for being willing to listen to this kind of weird stuff for a few days, and I hope that that through all of this we maybe like can appreciate space just a little bit more. It's hard to appreciate space, right? Because there's nothing there. But it gives us our life. Homage to space. Homage to the things of space. Homage to all the Zen crazies that come out to study space.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.